Today we will be hearing from Dan Labatt, editor of Mexican Labor News and Analysis, and the author of The Mask of Democracy, Labor Suppression in Mexico Today, and many other books, in his own words.
I'm a person who follows labor unions from a partisan perspective, I would say. That is, I'm someone who is on the side of workers, on the side of unions. I think that it's good for workers to organize, to have power.
Today, Dan will be discussing the liquidation of the Central Light and Power Company of Mexico by the Calderon government. Last week, the Mexican government announced that the Central Light and Power Company of Mexico would be shut down and all of its 45,000 workers fired, thus killing the once powerful Mexican Electrical Workers Union. The Calderon government is hell-bent on destroying the Electrical Workers Union because it has been a leading force in organizing opposition to the current government and its neoliberal economic policies, the privatization of the electrical industry being a prime example. Currently, facilities that were previously under the control of the Central Light and Power Company and the Mexican Electrical Workers Union are being run by the Federal Electrical Commission and a SCAB union loyal to the government.
In Mexico, the Felipe Calderon administration, which is an administration of the National Action Party, Mexico's conservative, pro-business, historically founded by people in the Catholic Church and by people who were bankers, a very conservative party. Felipe Calderon, who is the president, whose election to the presidency was contested in the last election, another candidate claimed that he had won the election. But in any case, Felipe Calderon, the president of Mexico, decided to send the federal police to seize the power plants of the Light and Power Company of Central Mexico, which provides electricity to Mexico City and several surrounding states, and also announced the liquidation of the company, that is, the legal existence of that company. By liquidating the company, eliminated the labor union. The labor union is called the Sindicato Mexicano de Electricistas, or ESME, by its letters, S-M-E. And it is a very important union in Mexico City, a very militant and historically independent labor union, very democratic in its internal life, very militant, frequently in the streets, and has been very much opposed to the president's policies. Eventually, 5,000 police seized the plants. Another 10,000 to 20,000 police were on alert as a potential backup to those. So this is a massive police action in which the police actually went in, took over the plants, drove out the workers who were working there, replaced them with management or with workers from another government-owned electric company. These are both government-owned companies. Replaced them with workers from another government-owned electric company, which has a much more docile union, a union controlled historically by the government, the previous government ruling party, but very amenable to the powers that be. With regard to the electrical workers, for the last 30 or 40 years, whether under the previous ruling party, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, or the PRI, or under the PAN presidents, Vicente Fox, or Felipe Calderon, the government has wanted to try to get rid of both this independent economic entity, which is the Light and Power Company, and also to rid itself of this union. But for many years, it just seemed to previous, I mean, there were many attempts to fight the union, but it seemed like it was just too big a job, I think, for previous governments to take on. The union carried out a strike in 1986, and when it shut down the power in Mexico City, so there was, you know, there have been actual contests there to try to do this in the past, but the union has survived. So Calderon has really carried out a real kind of political coup here in having the audacity to attempt to, in one blow, get rid of this union.
It appears that the Mexican Electrical Workers Union did not put up any resistance to the Calderon government's police attack. However, the situation may not be entirely grim for the Mexican working class. There is a chance that the level of struggle in Mexico is going to radically change.
The overriding situation is the fact that the military moved in successfully and seized these plants without the workers defending those plants or keeping the police out. I said the military, but it's the police. But it's the federal police, which is quasi-military. For example, I read in the paper that 30 agents had gone and seized the central distribution facility for Mexican Power in the central Mexico. 30 police. Well, it makes me ask the question, since this was known about 10 days in advance that the government was planning to do this. There had been rumors of this. I had written a story about it 10 days in advance or so, at least a week. So the fact that the workers failed to defend those plants when the police came in, or that the union had not mobilized thousands of its members. It has 45,000 members, and this is one of the few unions in Mexico that if you called them on Monday and said, we need 45,000 people on the streets on Friday they were there. So there aren't many unions in Mexico that can do that, or any place in the world. So this was a union with a tremendous capacity to mobilize, to convene and mobilize its membership. And yet it failed in that initial takeover. And so the police have moved in, have taken the plants. They're now held by over 5,000 Mexican police with 10 to 20,000 backup police or military of other sorts. And the workers are out of the plant. They have been replaced by management or by members of workers from the other electrical company of Mexico, the other government-owned company called the Federal Electrical Commission. And those workers, members of a very conservative union, are now in the workplace. So, I mean, the first thing one thinks of in a workplace, in a union struggle, is the use of the economic power of workers in the workplace to defend themselves and their control over the workplace. That is, the great sit-down strikes in history were based on the fact that the workers had taken the workplace. That did not happen here, and it seems unlikely to happen here. That is, I don't see the union prepared to make the move to try to seize or take back these plants. That would be key, I think, to a strategy. But what has happened is that the union was in an internecine battle, a very bad internal political fight just before this took place. The two factions in the union, one of which had been tacitly backed by the government, was moving into the orbit of the government. That faction reunited with the other faction, and the factions reunited, and so that was good in terms of the internal health of the union. In other words, this was an overriding threat. Secondly, the union formed an alliance that has been supported by other unions in Mexico. There have been big demonstrations. The most recent demonstration a couple of days ago was somewhere between 100, the official estimate of the crowd was 150,000. The movement's own estimate of the crowd was 300,000. So this is a very large rally. Mexico's had rallies of 1 million or more, maybe 2 million in some cases. But this is a huge rally, 300,000 people marching in Mexico City. Outside of Mexico City, there were mobilizations of thousands of workers and protests, including the takeover of buildings and strikes and street protests. Particularly, I noticed in the states of Oaxaca and San Luis Potosí and Morelos, so in several other states of Mexico, there have been supportive demonstrations, sort of in the places one would expect, which are more states with a more left-wing or labor militant history. And then also, quite interestingly, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, this man who claims to have won the last election and calls himself the legitimate president of Mexico, who is an enormously popular person who has spent the last 3 years traveling through Mexico, speaking week after week to crowds of thousands throughout Mexico, telling them the government is not legitimate, that the government needs to be overthrown, or the government needs to be replaced with another government, that they need to create a government that will stand up against neoliberal globalization and so on. The Andrés Manuel López Obrador's movement, he put his platform at the disposal of the electrical workers, and his people mobilized for this big march of 300,000. And that is, and obviously he has a great interest in this, because this is a strike at the heart of his political base in Mexico City. It is clearly a strike by the Calderón government at him, as well as at the electrical workers. And he's responded by allying with them. There's a kind of social mobilization in the terms of demonstrations and marches. In my view, I do not believe that will be sufficient in this case to turn this around at all. There was a day of negotiations last week between the government and the union at the end of the week, and the government said, this is an irreversible process. This is not going to change. Several government spokespersons, secretaries said that. So they are not going to, they're not going to back down on this. And marches will not change this. I mean, it seems to me, in the most narrow way that I'm putting at it, the union, these workers have, at least it appears right now, these workers have lost. That is, their company is gone, their jobs are gone, and their union is gone. Now, there's another way to look at this, that some commentators are arguing that this huge demonstration, this series of events, is a key turning point in the consciousness of the Mexican people as they see this government taking a series of steps, anti-working class, anti-poor people, anti-indigenous, anti-women, the appointment of the recent Mexican Attorney General, former man from Chihuahua, who is responsible for the investigation of the femicides, the killing of the hundreds of women in Ciudad Juarez, who was considered incompetent or possibly corrupt in his handling of these cases, the fact that he became the attorney general. So people are looking at a series of things that have happened now under Calderón. Calderón has sent out tens of thousands of troops in this war on drugs. Somewhere between 45,000 and 55,000 troops are in states in Mexico fighting this war on drugs. There's over 14,000 people dead in this war in the last 3 years. The use of the military in the drug war has led to hundreds of cases, according to some, according to the human rights organizations and critics of the government, hundreds of cases of violations of civil rights of Mexicans, not only unlawful searches and seizures and roughing up and beating up, but torture and murder and rape and so on. So people are looking at Mexico and saying, this incident, the seizure and the elimination of the electrical company, the elimination of the electrical workers' union, this mass mobilization could be a turning point in Mexican consciousness. Now, I think in history, few turning points come out of this kind of, well, what appears to be a defeat. Now the question is, can this be the turning point that can turn this defeat into a victory?
Dan discusses the class conflict between the labor movement and the Mexican state, particularly recent attacks on the Mexican Electrical Workers Union and the Mexican Mine and Metal Workers Union.
The Calderón administration has been at war with the Mexican labor union since it took office, at least with some of them. The most striking case is the attack it has carried out for the last several years against the Mexican Mine and Metal Workers Union. The Mexican Miners and Metal Workers Union, a large and important industrial union representing miners and steel workers, was attacked by the government in a different way. The government came in and said, using a government procedure, said, your officers are not really acceptable legal officers of the union because we accuse your top officer of being engaged in massive fraud of millions of dollars. charged him with this fraud, he fled the country to Vancouver, British Columbia, and has been leading the union from there. This was done with the Calderon government and Grupo Mexico, which is the most important mining companies in Mexico, colluding really to try to smash this union. There was a months and months long strike at the Cananea copper mine and many other strikes that the miners were engaged in. During the same period, there was the suppression of a steel worker strike in the state of Michoacán, in the city of Lázaro Cárdenas, where two workers were killed. So the Calderón government has been pursuing that war on the Miners and Metal Workers Union. The Miners and Metal Workers Union have done a really remarkable job of standing up to the government in spite of a terrible attack with its legal ramifications. The government also has been attempting to made an alliance with the leader of the teachers union, whose name is Elba Esther Gordillo. But within her union, there is a large opposition movement. Really, the most important labor movement in Mexico for the last 25 years has been the Coordinating Committee of the Mexican Teachers Union, which is a democratic opposition within the union, which has the loyalty of workers in the southern states of Chiapas and Oaxaca at several big locals in Mexico City. So there's been a huge struggle of the Democratic Union against the Democratic Committee within the union against the teachers union leadership and its alliance with Felipe Calderón. The National Action Party, its roots were in the business classes of northern Mexico and in conservative religious groups in Mexico. That's the historic origin of the party. Over the years, it went through many, many evolutions. But it remains fundamentally a business party, and it's been dominated in large measure by Coparmex, the Mexican Employers Association. And Coparmex, its program has been to attack and weaken the labor unions, and this is the goal of the Mexican business elite and the big corporations, and backed up by the big corporate media in Mexico, Televisa and Televisión Azteca. So these forces want these unions to be weakened. And why? Well, for the reason that business people all over the world want unions to be weakened, because they want to have greater power over the workplace, over society, because they want to be able to exploit workers more than they are. That is, the Mexican Electrical Workers Union, the SME, the one we're talking about, had very good contracts, very high wages, very good conditions relative to other Mexican workers, and the employers wanted to end that. They wanted to end that because that the strength of that union also represented power of unions in the country and power potentially to strengthen other unions and other movements, and that union stood directly in the path of the government's desire to privatize the electric energy industry eventually and to privatize the petroleum industry. The electrical workers had been the leader of the national front against privatization.
By destroying the Mexican unions, the Calderón government is following the path of Pinochet, Thatcher, and Reagan.
That what Calderón has done is a Margaret Thatcher here. That is, Margaret Thatcher went in and smashed the miners and the dockers and other unions in Great Britain. You know, Ronald Reagan did something very like this. He fired 13,000 air traffic controllers as soon as he became president in a conflict, saying that they had no right to go on strike. These are acts that Calderón is carrying out very much on the model of Thatcher and Reagan, who are, of course, the people who launched the entire neoliberal global revolution, what we might call it, counter-revolution. That is, it was Reagan and Thatcher who first, taking the model of Chile, taking the model of the rescue. rescue package so-called for New York City and its fiscal crisis in the 1970s. And it was Reagan and Thatcher who took those experiences and took them out of England and the United States and took them out into the world and said, we're going to go knock down tariff barriers, we're going to demand, we're going to force privatization, and used as their instruments to accomplish that, of course, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, what later became the World Trade Organization. So they used those international financial institutions to institute anybody who wanted money from the international financial world had to carry out what were called structural adjustments in their own countries. And those structural adjustments very often meant not only cutting the federal budget and so on, but also the privatization of corporations. And NAFTA forms a smaller part within that great global transformation of the world economy. The North American Free Trade Agreement was really kind of a ratification of ongoing processes taking place between the United States, Canada, and Mexico of an ongoing integration, but also an attempt to formalize and seal that and to say that U.S. multinational corporations would be able to take advantage of the great natural resources of Canada, the cheap labor of Mexico, the capital that was accumulated in the United States, to create a competing common market to rival the common market of Europe and to rival the power of Japan in Asia. Later, now, of course, China has become the rising power there. But in any case, this is very much in line with the whole neoliberal agenda, of which another smaller part of that has been the Plan Puebla Panama and the various security and prosperity agreements that are proposed for Mexico and the United States, all of which are attempts to build a greater integration politically, economically, militarily of the United States and Mexico.
Dan elaborates on the type of industrial and political actions that could possibly reverse the situation in Mexico.
In this particular situation regarding the electric company and the electric workers, it seems to me it would take a heroic kind of workers' combat organization within the electrical workers and their allies, prepared to go in and, for example, attempt to seize that central power distribution station, where they would then control. This would be something like, you know, the famous seizure of the plant at General Motors back in 1937. That is when workers said, you know, in order to win against General Motors, you've got to control the plant that has all the dies that you, which are used to stamp out all these auto parts. And if you control those, the company can't make cars. If they can't make cars, they can't make money. If they can't make money, then they hurt. And so, if the union could seize that power plant, I mean, in Mexico, it is very common to have these huge mass protests. It is, workers in Mexico even frequently block the federal highways and tie them up for hours or days. For many years, the practice in Mexico, when there was a strike, that the workers would hold as prisoners people in management or owners of companies and hold them prisoner during the strike, a kind of a prisoner of war. This is now, those workers are now accused of kidnapping. So it seems to me that if one is going to be able to win in a situation like this, there would have to be something like what happened in Oaxaca a few years ago. People described the situation in Oaxaca as a civic uprising. Now, the people in Oaxaca lost that one. That is, they were fighting to get rid of their governor, and they could not do it. You would have to have a civic uprising where the working class and poor people of Mexico City, joined by other working class and poor people in other cities, were prepared to take action that could really paralyze the ability of the Mexican government and of Mexican business to conduct business as usual. That is, there would have to be direct action, civil disobedience, the use of force. I'm not talking talking about violence against people, but I'm talking about a forceful assertion of the workers' power over the workplace, the streets, government buildings, that sort of thing. If you can mobilize those 300 people, if they had taken those 300,000 people to that power distribution plant, they could have outnumbered and they could have made it difficult for even several thousand police to stop them. So, but now if you do that, I think one has to be realistic and say, you have to look back at the experience of Oaxaca, what happened in Oaxaca when there was a civic uprising. The result of that was that there was also increased government repression. There were police shootings and killings. There was the appearance of there were many people who were detained and beaten and tortured. And there was also the appearance of death squads who started killing people in Oaxaca. So we had about 25 people killed in the civic uprising in Oaxaca. So if you're thinking of Mexico City on a much bigger scale, you're talking about raising the level of struggle to a place that would also raise the level of repression. And I think that then the question is it possible to change the balance of forces in your favor, or do you increase the repression? Those are difficult things. That's something the Mexican workers' movement, the Mexican people, will have to make decisions about and measure. I'm not the person to say what they should do, but I think it would take a very high level of struggle to reverse the situation in Mexico.
In order for any struggle to be successful, solidarity is key.
People who want to show solidarity with the Mexican electrical workers, if they go to the Labor Notes site, I have an article there, and that article has a link to the Labor Notes solidarity site where there is a model letter you can send if you like, or you can write your own letter, and it gives you the address both of President Calderon and also of the Mexican Electrical Workers Union so that they get a copy, or you could write directly to them expressing your being on their side. They have asked, at the time that that model letter was written, they had asked for three things. One is remove the police from the workplace. Two is to revoke the liquidation, the elimination of their company. And the third was to establish negotiations between the government and the union. And so the letter asks the president to do that. People might want to write other things about how they feel about this situation. I think it is a turning point in Mexico's recent labor history. And the business press expressed glee at this. Both the Mexican and the foreign business press are just overjoyed. They are thrilled at to see this union going down, and many of them are suggesting that other Mexican labor unions should also go down, should also be broken. They mentioned the Petroleum Workers Union, they mentioned the Teachers Union in some of the articles. That is, this has really, the taste of blood has really whetted the appetite of Mexican capital and foreign capital, and they really want to move forward with this. So this is something of a turning point in modern Mexican labor and social history. And it's a place that it matters for us to know about and to care about and to look for ways to show solidarity. And I think the best thing one can always do to help workers in another country is you can only do things with organization. We have to build organizations here and build solidarity movements and dates. We have to be capable of carrying out the kind of fight that's necessary to defend human dignity, human rights, a decent life in our own country so we can help people elsewhere.
Cada vez que yo voy a tu casa por ti, se me acerca tu perro y viene a mí. Es tu perro la nudo que me hace enojar. Le digo, baja tus patas que me das mucha lata. Baja tus patas que me das mucha lata.